tells the wars to cease. O mighty one of Israel, you are on our side. We walk by faith in God who burns the chariots with fire. Lord of hosts, you lead us, with us in the fire, with us as a shelter, with us in the storm, you will lead us.
Okay, so if you remember from last time, we were looking at the honest truth about dishonesty. And this is by a professor from Duke. It's a great book. And he goes into a lot of the Bible as well. And he has this on his website there. He's got a nice quote. He's just a real great guy. And he talks about, self-deception, basically. That's what it boils down to. And he had noticed early on, because he's got a couple PhDs, that the main theory among sociologists was what they called the simple model of rational crime. Basically, that people would look at crime, any crime they might be able to commit, and they would say, what will I get from it? What are the chances I get caught? And if I get caught, what is going to be the punishment? And those are the three things that go into all your decision-making, which is a pretty sad view of the world, right? By the way, even as a libertarian, and Ayn Rand was a libertarian, she was very big on that. She called it rational egoism. You should be able to do as much as you possibly can to your fellow man, and as long as you get away with it, that's maximizing yourself. She was a horrible atheist, really. A great libertarian, but a horrible atheist. So, let's go back. This slide right here, a lot of the tests that this man and his associates performed, they're basically little math tests where they take these matrices, and you'd have to quickly go through 20 of them and figure out which numbers add up to 10, because there are two numbers in each block. And then at the end, you see, how well you did. He did different conditions. And we'll go ahead and go to the summary here, like 38 slides in. So he did different conditions to see what causes people to cheat more. Okay, summary. This is from last time. So usually people, when they're solving those 20, they can solve 4. If you give them the ability to cheat where they think they can't get caught, suddenly they can solve 6. In general. And so what they found out is that it's not that it's a few people doing a whole ton of cheating, like saying, yeah, I solved all 20. Most of the time it's because people will cheat just a little bit for themselves and say, I'm still a good person. I didn't like go and really just roll over the whole system here. I only cheated a tiny bit. Bless you. Woo! Gosh, that's the pestilence, right? If money is involved, people will cheat a little. What happens, though, if you say, like, if you make it so that people can cheat, and then for every time they cheat, they get a lot of money? A lot of people, if you're doing the simple model of crime, would say the cheating is going to skyrocket because you're making tons of money. Turns out, cheating goes to zero. Why? Because suddenly it puts you face-to-face with your actual self. You cannot convince yourself anymore that you're an honest person. You cannot say, I'm ripping this person off for $400 on a simple test here in college, right? Just because I can. So, how about this? We know that the average person solves 4 of them. Now, if I prime you you're coming in, and I say, the average person solves 8. How many will you say you solved? 8. You would think, maybe 8.
No.
Or you would think 10, right? Because people are estimating a little bit higher. Turns out it's still just 6. And what we find out from that is it's not based on what other people think about you, your propensity to lie. It's still based on how you're viewing yourself, not what you think the average is. So that's kind of good to know. Now, they also went and did some tests to see, like, how much do we lie? They had a person who was blind versus a person who wasn't. And they found out that, believe it or not, people who are blind or have these disabilities, people cheat on them less. In fact, they will do you favors. Which once again shows that, hey, this sociology's view that we're going to do what we can get away with, not quite correct. That's not how people actually operate. They also found out there's something called the fudge factor. They went and left 6 packs in all these college dorms, right? And they also left $6. The dollars were never taken. In the same way, they found out that if on these tests, if you had to go up to the proctor afterward and say, okay, without the proctor knowing you cheated, say, hey, Kevin, I solved 10. Go ahead and give me my $10. They found out that if you did that, you wouldn't cheat very much at all, having to take it directly from someone. But here's what's amazing, the fudge factor. If you give someone 10 tokens and say you go up, tell the proctor you did 10, he'll give you 10 tokens, and you take those tokens and exchange it for money, guess what? Cheating went way up. It's all about being able, 200% more, by the way, to distance yourself from your own cheating, to be able to mentally convince yourself that you are a good and honest person. And so any extra distance you add can increase your dishonesty. We saw that the Ten Commandments, by the way, they did this at UCLA. They had people go in. They said before the test, they didn't tell them what's going on. They just said, we want you to remember 10 books that you read in your childhood. And then they went and tested the cheating. And then they said, now, remember the Ten Commandments with a bunch of different people. If you told people to remember the Ten Commandments, the cheating dropped to nothing. If you told them to remember 10 random books, it didn't really have an effect on people. And then I mentioned there was a professor at in North Carolina who got in trouble for that, for having all of his students sign a pledge for a test saying that if I cheat on this test, my soul will be damned to hell forever. It was very effective, but the university system said, okay, man, you can't do it. And he said, but it works whether or not you believe in God. They said, okay, that's cool, but we're not going to let you do that. You got to come up with a different statement, which I thought was pretty funny. We also found out that when your willpower is worn down, that you are more likely to cheat. So if you have to keep making decisions throughout the day that are very critical or very tiresome, believe it or not, it fatigues you, and you're more likely to cheat afterward. And then the last thing we looked at is being a faker. And this is my favorite. Who's seen someone with good Gucci glasses on? No one else has? I have. It was really amazing is I've seen someone with Gucci glasses on and a Louis Vuitton bag sitting in economy. Woo! What you do on the back of the plane? You should be up front. You got all that money. So, people get fake stuff all the time, right? And what they found out with their tests, they would have people think that they were wearing fake designer glasses. They would give them glasses, say, hey, these are made to look like Chloe glasses. We're going to have you view the art. And ostensibly, they were just trying to get these people to test out whether or not the art looked as good with fake glasses as normal ones. And then they kept wearing the fake glasses. Now, the truth was that these were actual designer glasses, right? And the other people, they told the truth. These are real designer glasses. And then they had a class where they didn't tell them anything. Just, hey, we need to test all these glasses. What they found out is that if you do this with a handbag or glasses or anything else that makes you think that you are pulling a slick one on humanity, that you are fibbing, right, that you are faking your affluence or anything else, the cheating more than doubled. If you already think that you're pulling something over on society, guess what? You've already degraded that morality. You're willing to cheat even more. So whoever here has fake stuff, get rid of it. Looks trashy anyway. Just kidding. I did find a pair of glasses on the trail that I thought were dollar store, and as it turns out, they were not. I said, wow. And my mom claims, by the way, that they actually do affect the quality of your viewing experience. I don't know. I've never had glasses worth more than like $5. So, now, in part two, do you see these dots here? This you got this rectangle that's split in half. They did what they call the dot task. And basically, very quickly, you'd be on a computer, and you got to look at that and very quickly determine which side has more dots on it. Right? The right side or left side? Now, what they did, though, is you end up finding out in this task that if you choose the left side, you earn half a cent. If you choose the right side, you earn 5 cents. It's the same as the matrix test they did. There was a lot of cheating, but only a little bit per person. Now, they did say, this was very funny in reading the report, that people wearing what they thought were fake sunglasses cheated at full throttle. They got all the money. Like, they were like, okay, I can earn $20, I'm doing it, or whatever the amount of money was. So, they also found out something else. The more, by the way, this is not formatted as I did it, so I blame my laptop. Here's something interesting. if you are given the opportunity to cheat just a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, will you continue on a flat trajectory of your cheating? No. What they did is they just kept having people do hundreds of these. And, well, no, you would think they would be stepping up. They found out there's a threshold. At some point, your mind just says, you go from saying, I can view myself as decent and honest, and it just snaps, and you just say, I'm just a liar. And then the cheating would just go, whoop, straight through the roof. And suddenly, it's like you're wearing fake sunglasses. And I guess you could say, like, maybe they're a little fibs. I keep telling girls, I'm really handsome. I'm really handsome. At some point, that might actually affect my life. And as my mother has pointed out, these are people who are cheating just a little bit, fibbing just a little. So that doesn't quite apply with me. So they call that the what the heck effect. And I've kind of censored that. But we know that hell is in the Bible. Because what it is people at some point just say, oh, what the heck, I'm a liar, I guess. I'll just embrace it, right? Like, I already feel bad enough, I'll just embrace it. And in Galatians 5, 16 to 23, he says, but I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh, for the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do. But if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, impurity, sexuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and, this is my favorite part, things like these. He's not going to give you a full list. I mean, you should be able to figure some of that out, right? Like, you don't have to spell every single one out. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there is no law. And then we see back in verse 7 through 9 of the same chapter, you are running well, who hinders you from obeying the truth? This persuasion is not from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Basically saying, like, hey, the equivalent, you know, you throw in a little yeast, you're going to get that dough to rise. That's what he's saying there. Well, how does this apply to us when we cheat? As it turns out, you start doing a little cheating, especially on your diet, guess what happens? Oh, yeah. I mean, look, okay, so we're on a diet, right? On the other hand, McDonald's has fairly good French fries. Does one pack of McDonald's French fries matter? No, you're wrong. Both of you are wrong. And while you're at it, you're already cheating a little bit, so does it matter if it's a small versus a large? I mean, you're already there, right? So just go ahead, just do it once, just the big one, though. That way, at least you're maximizing your cheating. So they found out once you start violating your own standards, guess what happens? So is there a way that you can prevent violating your own standards? There are a lot of ways. We'll get into them. But one right off the bat, of course, is having people who remind you of the right thing, even when it's inconvenient, even when you don't want to hear it. No one came up to me afterward, by the way, with any reminders for me. So here's what's, I call this section up to no good. They had these poor folks in their fake but real designer sunglasses go and evaluate some statements. And a lot of these questions were not face valid. There was a lot of filler questions because they didn't want people to know exactly what they were testing on. They weren't told that. So this is too small, unfortunately, for you guys to read, so I'll read it to you. Set A of the ones they were really evaluating was, how likely are people you know to engage in the following behaviors? And they tested people again with the glasses and all these different scenarios. How about this? Stand in the express line with too many groceries. Who has ever seen someone do that? Who has ever done that? Yes, yes, ma'am. Guess what? 16 is not that much bigger than 15. It is not. Telling you what. Especially if you factor in, like, here's how I can make it work out. The cashier's got to go code in all your lettuce and your fruits and stuff, right? And here, like, I got 16 items, but just swipe, 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 and you're done. Like, well, I'm actually faster. So how about this? Try to board a plane before their group number is called. Oh, yes. Oh, Wendell does this all the time. He is terrible. Like, yeah, I've seen it happen. Now, I like to always comment, too, that all the people, they call them gate lice. People you see standing up 60 minutes before the plane's supposed to depart. I always like to comment, like, be careful, the plane's going to leave without you. No, you're already there. Just get in line when it's time. You're getting the same seat anyway. Okay. Inflate their business expense report. I don't know about that. Never done it. tell their supervisor that progress has been made on a project when none has been made. Oh, have you ever done that, ever? How's it coming along on your ALS? Oh, really? You've never done that? Oh, yeah, it's great. I'm ready for the test. Now, this was a little bit true. I was ready for my advanced leadership test. The part that was kind of fibbing was I had not studied any of it and just figured I'll wing it and pass. Guess what? I winged it and passed. Thanks, Air Force. I know how dumb the level is of testing there. So that was my bad. I admitted to my own flaws. Take home office supplies from work. Maybe. Yeah, I kind of evened out the kind of the balance scales there once by my boss. He's really picky about stuff. I was improving the tower by actually spending my own stuff, replacing stuff that technicians had taken out and forgotten to replace. It's been months. Like, our wind sensor was broken, so I went and got my hand tools and I did stuff. He came up and yelled at me and said, "That's an unauthorized console modification." And then he wouldn't give us enough pins, so how can we write down our air traffic stuff? So you know what I did? Well, Amazon had a special, and it equated to about like 0.25 cents per pin. I got 2,000 pins, and I kept bringing them in. I was not stealing. I was giving so many that he actually put out a letter that said controllers are no longer allowed to use their own pins. And he confiscated all 2,000 of them. So I made up for that. Oh, you're learning all the bad stuff about me. Okay, lie to an insurance company about the value of goods that were damaged. No, I've never had that happen. Buy a garment, wear it, and return it. Lie to their partner about the number of blank partners they've had. Censor that a little bit, guys. Okay, how about this? When the following lines are uttered, how likely is it that they are a lie? Sorry, I'm late. Traffic was terrible. Just terrible. My GPA is 4.0. It was good meeting you. Let's have lunch sometime. Okay. Sure, I'll start working on that tonight as soon as I get home. Yeah, John was with me last night. Or I thought I already sent that email out. I'm sure that I did. Your spam, or the others, my spam filter caught your email, didn't see it. And then lastly, they had how likely are individuals to take the action described. So here's just one. Steve's operations manager at a firm that produces pesticides and fertilizers for lawns and gardens. A certain toxic chemical is going to be banned in a year. For this reason, it's extremely cheap now. If Steve buys his chemical, produces and distributes his product fast enough, he will be able to make a very nice profit. What's the likelihood that Steve will sell this chemical while it is still legal? Knowing it's going to be illegal. And then Dell's not here today, but they did have an example about Dell that I included. So we'll just skip that because you get the point. What were the results? Well, if you wore the fake glasses, right, or the ones you thought were fake, you're more likely to, A, believe that people will behave dishonestly, B, that common excuses and lies are being told to hide the truth, and also that people will be shady to maximize their own gain. So what did we learn about that? Not only do fake things and thinking that you're pulling the wool over somebody's eyes cause us to be more dishonest, they cause me to view you as being more dishonest as well. Changes your behavior, not just how you act, but how you think others are acting. My dad, who will never listen to this, he would not drink a glass of water if it was left out of his presence. Why? Yes! What does that tell you about him? Yeah, it tells you, you may want to watch this guy, because what you start doing starts influencing what you think others are doing. He always thought he was getting scammed, grifted, something was going on, someone was out to get him, someone was out to hurt him. Why? Because that's what he was out to do. Like, that's what happens. You start doing that. His favorite, I've mentioned this before, his favorite guy ever was in a John Grisham novel who, he went up on the stand, and he had lied so well and so long that he actually believed his own lie and convinced everyone. And he had said to me, he's like, "This is perfect. Can you believe this guy?" I was like, "That should not be your hero." So what do Kenneth Kaiser, the chief operating officer of Pepsi, and Mary Lee Jones, author of Less Stress, More Success, by the way, Mary Lee Jones, the MIT's dean of admissions, what do they have in common? Along with a bunch of other people, but I just named two of them. Give you a hint, they're well into their careers. Well into their careers. And it's discovered, including the dean of admissions for MIT, her degree's all fake. Did not exist. Fabricated. Yes. Wow. Now, the lieutenant governor and the former general up in Montana, same thing, cheated, faked his way. And you know what they said when asked about it? Well, I knew I needed a little bit of success at first, and I figured I'd go back and do it sometime. So I started off with just a BA. And then all of a sudden, you got a fake master's degree, and then a fake PhD. And then all of a sudden, you are thinking, yes, I'm a doctor. Woo! You can convince yourself of your own lies. Now, Dan Ariely, who wrote the book, he's got a great example of this. Summer of 89, he's flying. He got burned real bad, right? And this is well after his burn, though, so he's able to walk and everything. But the summer of 89, he's flying from JFK to London Heathrow. And they got into check-in a little bit late, and the lines were super long for the Air India flight. Who would have guessed? And so guess what they quickly decide, him and his friend Ken. Say, hey, Ken, what if I was a wheelchair user? I look like I could be. We get to skip the lines. So, okay, they did. Put him in a wheelchair, went straight to the front. Well, then guess what? Now he's got to use the bathroom, but he can't just get out of the wheelchair now. So he goes in and he finds out the restroom facilities are not designed for wheelchairs. So he has to have his friend Ken lift him up to the toilet. So he's not very happy about this decision. But everyone's watching, so then he goes to the plane and they let him on. Well, the planes back then were not designed for wheelchair users. So he said, what do we do? The flight attendant said, well, your friend needs to carry you to your seat, sir. So now it's about an 8-hour flight. And he's got to pee real bad. And Ken says, I'm not taking you. So he's stuck. He's stuck. So, he found a solution. He fibbed about a little bit, committed to the fib, came up with his own problems. So then guess what, though? He was so incensed by this whole affair that he wrote an indignant letter to the head of Air India saying, do you know what you do to disabled people? I'm disabled. He said it wasn't until he got a very apologetic response that he actually felt bad and said, oh, wow, I've become a liar. Convinced himself of his own lies. You gotta watch it. You can start buying in to your own stuff. So can you actually believe your own lies? Well, yes, they did a fake IQ test. One was one where it was graded in blank, and the other had an answer key so the test taker could check their work afterward. Well, they found out again, if you let people cheat, they cheat a little but a lot, right? So there are a lot of people cheating just a little bit. Now, what happens if I do that test? Let's say, okay, that was the preparatory IQ exam. Let's say that, we'll just say out of 10, right? You actually scored 5, but you said you scored 7. And now we're going to have you take a test with 100 questions on it, the actual test. Now, before you take the test, I'm going to have you guess how well you're going to do. And this prep test should tell you exactly. What do you think happens if you cheated? Any thoughts? Oh, well, people who cheated literally expected they would perform better on the second test. You convinced yourself. Now, you would say, well, maybe they're just trying to hold to the lie. How about we say, if you're even vaguely accurate on how we perform a second test on your prediction, we'll pay you $20? You would think, like, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to scale it back to get the money. Oh, no. That lie convinces you. Yeah, people, they did not get the $20. They still thought, oh man, I knew I cheated a little bit, but I must be that smart. So no one got the money. That is how willing people are to believe their own lies. So self-deception beats out money. You also will convince yourself that you're retroactively right, which is why Dan Ariely, he named his department at the university the Center for Advanced Hindsight, because he would tell people these things and they would always say, oh, I knew that all along. But if he asked them to predict the answers beforehand, they would never get it right. So he said, okay, we're not doing that anymore because it turns out people know everything. They're very smart. And lying publicly, by the way, tends to act as a touchstone. Does anyone know Dan Rather? Does anyone know what he did? He's a brave man. I salute him for his time in the Marines. Oh, wait. Oh, that didn't happen. But did he cry about it on air? About what a tough experience it was for him? Yes. How about, what was the guy who got shot at, like over in Somalia on the helicopter? Who was it? Clinton was over in Bosnia under sniper fire. But yeah, then, Yeah, I was over in Bosnia under sniper fire. Then there was another reporter who was shot at in Somalia, was on the helicopters. Turns out, no, that never happened. As it turns out, that once you make something public, you start believing it more. And what they did is they had people take a math test, and they gave them a certificate, right, that certifies just how smart you are. Well, they followed up on this math score prediction, too, because they have you take the little math test, right? And you know, they found out that if you get a certificate beforehand, you show it off publicly, you're more likely to lie and actually start believing you're a math genius, too. So the more public you are about your lies as well, the more likely you are to become a very bold liar. Here's something weird, though. If you make it so that people have to work to lie, so they did this math test where you got to do like the matrices, and you could see what you're going to get. You could see what the answers were if you moved your mouse down and noticed that if you hovered over the bottom right of the screen, it'll tell you the answers. And they found out people couldn't lie then. They couldn't trick themselves. It's that distance you're putting between yourself and the lie. And Dan also talks about white lies. This is when a lie is not meant to necessarily increase your own self-interest. For example, when I had my surgery done, I'll tell you my story. The surgeon told me, she's like, oh yeah, it's going to be great, blah, blah, it'll be fine. And I went in and I was happy, right, just thinking it's just outpatient. And then I found out it's actually 5 hours of surgery on my face. Okay, but it's still just outpatient. And I got in there and I was like, I'm ready for this. I remember when I had my wisdom teeth out, I felt so good afterward. And they all seemed very serious in the operating room. And the guy goes, not even the anesthesia is going to feel good. I said, what? He goes, this is probably going to hurt. And he put it in and I started going, okay, this is... He goes, how does that feel? I said, it feels like you ripped my bones out. When do I go unconscious? He goes, it takes a little bit longer for this, for all the stuff we're doing. I was like, what? When I finally woke up, and when I woke, actually, let me explain this. When I woke up from my wisdom teeth being removed, I felt so good. I was badgering the nurses. I was accusing them of giving me the bad meds. I said, you didn't give me fentanyl, and you didn't give me ketamine, and that is true. They would never do that. But my medic mind was thinking, why didn't you give me the good stuff? And I was very happy. And they actually kicked me out early. They called my girlfriend and said, you've got to get rid of this kid. He's pestering us. And I felt so good. I slept so well. I just felt great. I was telling people, I was going up, you're kind of cute. No, you're not. Really exposed, like, what an inner rat I am. Now, that was great, though. I was so happy. I also was supposed to be supervised, and I did pee on the floor in Target because my girlfriend wanted to go shopping, and she was not supposed to take me out in public, and she took me immediately to Target. So that was a problem. But for this surgery, when I woke up, I instantly assessed my motor function and said, okay, I'm able to move, and I'm very cognizant. Oh, my goodness, the pain. I feel like I'm dying. And the nurse and doctor came in and said, oh, my goodness, you're up already. Do you need more IV narcs? I said, yes, give them to me. And they gave them to me. They said, how does that feel? I said, no difference. And the doctor looked at me and said, yeah, we don't really tell you that beforehand to kind of decrease your anxiety. Because we just burned your face because they did a bunch of radiation there and stuff too. She goes, so it's just better if you just don't know because then you don't sleep well. It's worse than your immune system. So in that case, it was a white lie. We'll kind of come back to that. But keep that in mind. These little white lies that people tell sometimes to increase, I guess, your goodness. Does anyone know Richard Feynman, physicist? Got some great stuff. He says, the first principle is that you must not fool yourself. You are the easiest person to fool. Yes. So there's inner conflict we have. It's desire to lie with the desire to see ourselves as good. We'll go ahead and end here in a couple minutes. So, has anyone ever taken a survey to like buy a new car or anything? Figure out what job you're good for? Yeah, done that? Well, Dan noted that you can become very creative. Back when the internet was just starting out, Dr. Ariely, he got on there, he needed a new car. And they had a survey to help you figure out what car you needed. So he went through about 20 pages of stuff. The result was Ford Taurus. And he said, well, I didn't know, but I was sure that what I did not need was a Ford Taurus. So I retook the test. Ford Taurus. He said, I do not need or want a Ford Taurus. So I retook it again. He started changing his answers. And finally, guess what? He ended up with a convertible. And he said, now the test is right. So he started thinking about that. We don't often choose based on our explicit desires, right? Like, I know exactly what I want. often it's our gut instinct, and we kind of mentally massage ourselves into thinking, this is what I should be getting, and this is why it's rational for me to get this result. You'll see people do that. For example, my friend Brandon that I mentioned in class, who has a PhD now. This is great. This is my favorite story ever. We had to take this job test data bank survey when we were in school. And it was through like this Student Assistance Foundation of Montana. But anyway, he's going through it. He's like, what am I going to be when I grow up? It's going to tell me what my skills currently, based on my current knowledge and aptitude, are best suited for. And it gives you a whole list of jobs. Well, he got a list of just one job. And this angered him so much. His job list consisted of one, and it was sewer cleaner. And I said, yes, Brandon, this is correct. And he said, no, I'm taking it over. So this is what happens. You will tell yourself why the result you're getting is wrong, because some part of you wants something. So you're pulling the wool over your own eyes. Here's another question. What do you think predicts more often whether someone's going to lie or not? Is it their intelligence or their creativity? Any thoughts on that? Well, this, they have never said like that being a creative person makes you a liar. Well, they have found out that to be a very good liar, you are going to be very creative. In fact, when they look at like where the most fraudulent expenses come from, it's like art departments. Once you become good at just fabricating stuff out of whole cloth, you become pretty good at lying too. And it really has nothing to do with your intelligence. Do I have some very creative kids back there? Ash, are your children creative? Very creative? Incredibly creative children. The most creative. Superb artists. Anyway, so they found out that this is also correlated to what they call logic versus intuition. So I've showed you guys this test before. Logic is where you manually process something, right? You think about what's actually being asked. You do the hard work. Whereas intuition is your gut reaction. So if I say a bat and a baseball cost $1.10, the bat costs $1 more than the ball, how much does the ball cost? What's your quick answer to that? Together they cost $1.10. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. Any thoughts? Oh, 10 cents? It can't be. That is the easy answer that your gut wants to go with because your mind doesn't want to think about the question, right? Or this, if it takes 5 machines to make 5 widgets in 5 minutes, how long would it take 100 machines to make 100 widgets? People say 100 because, right, it's just flowing out of your mind. You're not thinking about it. Your brain's just spitting it out. That's not true. The bat and the ball, 5 cents, and $1.05 for a total of $1.10. It takes you just 5 minutes to make those widgets. So people who are committed to thinking about things rather than jumping to conclusions tend to lie a little bit less. And I think it's because your mind has to slow down, right? You're not going to be as creative. You're not going to try to fill in the gaps with stuff you don't know. That's kind of what we're talking about this morning, doing a snow job. Don't do that. Go through all the material. So anyway, they did these tests, and they wanted to see how well they would do on the matrix test, the dot test, the multiple choice trivia, such as what's the capital of Italy? How far can a kangaroo jump? What is a quokka? And you would get money based on each example. On the last test, they had a bubble sheet with erasure marks over the correct answers. So when you finally had to give in your stuff, you could kind of see what the correct answer was. You could cheat without getting caught. Who here knew that the capital of Switzerland was Zurich? Oh, it's not. It's Bern. But people, they found out, they would go and change their answers. The weird thing was that if they had not scored well on the creativity, they tended to not very creatively change their bubble sheet to make it correct. I'll see if I want to do this. Okay, we'll talk about two last slides here. And this is where we're going to end. Romans 12:17-19 says, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. In the last section of the book, which we're not going to get to, let everyone go, there's a wedding going on. Dan talks about, what about when you're confronted with, let's just say that you were around when Nazi Germany was storming the place, and you had a Jew hidden under your floor. The Nazis come in and they say, I know you're a good Christian. You're going to answer truthfully to me. Are you hiding a Jew? What do you do? He talks about that, and he talks about how the Bible explains it. He gives a whole bunch of examples. So that will be our last class on this one. It'll be shorter than this today. But for right now, let's focus on this. Repaying vengeance for vengeance. They wanted to determine whether or not people would lie for justice, right? Specifically, whether or not you would lie to protect someone, and whether or not you would lie because you're just angry. So what they did, they had this actor named Daniel. He asked coffee shop patrons to participate in a 5-minute task in return for $5. When they agreed, he would hand them 10 sheets of paper covered with random letters and ask them to find as many identical adjacent letters as they could and circle them with a pencil. After they finished, he'd return to their table, collect their sheets, hand them a small stack of bills, and say, here's your $5. Please count the money, sign the receipt, leave it on the table. I'll be back later to collect it. Now, here's what he did. He'd go up to you, and he would accidentally slip you $9 instead of $5. Right, pretty simple mistake. They wanted to see, do people want to repay vengeance for vengeance? So they would have him do, so he come up, starts talking to you, right? Hey, Daniel, will you please do this? Here's this test. He's already imposing on you. You just want to have your coffee. I'll give you $5. Oh, hang on. My friend's calling. Oh, hey, Kevin, yeah. You know, do some Taekwondo and pizza afterward? Oh, that sounds great, man. Yeah, always love hanging out with you. Okay, I'll talk to you later, bro. Puts it away, and he goes back talking to you. All right, so he's imposed on you a little bit, but you're getting something for it. And now he's imposed on you, but he's been rude. What happens there? Well, if you're not annoyed, 45% of people return the extra money, which is kind of sad. If you're annoyed, only 14% of people. Just because he's a little rude on his phone, everyone else said, you know what? Here's what you're thinking to yourself. Is it really a lie if I'm lying for justice because this guy deserves it? Right? Just kind of evening out the balance scales. He deserves it. So I think that's why God puts in that moral reminder of, hey, don't go take your own revenge. I've got this, right? As one of my preacher friends said, you know, when it says, that you should love and be kind to your enemies, for in doing so, you will lump burning coals upon their heads. He said, well, if it's all the same to you, Lord, can I just do the burning coals? That's kind of the attitude people take. Anyway, so the last section of his book is all about applied morality and how it actually looks for us. So what do you do when your wife says, how do I look in this dress? And you're about to go out for dinner. And you know it's that time of month. What do you do? Do you say, actually, do you know the difference between a Boeing 737 and a 777? One is what they call a narrow body, and the other is a wide body. Let me explain this to you and how that white makes you look. No, you don't do that. Most likely not. You may demur and say, that's a nice dress. Or you might say, you probably got a good deal on it. I don't know. I haven't practiced it yet. Anyway, the last section will be on applied morality, and I think it's the most fun, maybe a little bit more controversial.